the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Good evening. My name is Rachel, and I'm going to be leading us through the next part of the life of Joseph, which is a series that we started last week. We've been, over the course of this year, here at Belmont, if you've been around, been working through this theme called Blessed to be a Blessing, where we've started with Abraham, and we've gone through Abraham's descendants to Isaac, Jacob, and now we're at Joseph, looking at the promise that God gave to Abraham, that he would be with him, that he would bless him, and through him, and the blessing that he has given, that that would be a blessing to the nations and to the entire world. So we've got to Joseph, and that's the great-grandson of Abraham. Last week, Rob started us off, and we looked at how things started really well for Joseph in the beginning. He was the important one in the family in the eyes of his father, and he was given this amazing coat to wear that set him apart. But then things turned sour with his brothers, who weren't a fan of this, and they sold him to be a slave. And he was only 17 when that happened. We saw how, even though it didn't mention God that much in this passage, that God's stamp of providence was everywhere. So as we come to this next section in Joseph's life this evening, before we open our Bibles, I'm just going to spoil the story for you. I'm really sorry. This is where we're going, and I'm sure most of you know the story of Joseph, but I've drawn you a lovely diagram because I think it helps us see the overall picture of this section of the passage. So far, we've had Joseph was his dad's favourite, but then his brothers hated him and they sold him into slavery. So he arrives in Egypt, which is where we're starting off this evening, but he's a slave. He's lost his coat that was his identity, and he becomes a servant in the house of Potiphar. He works hard and Potiphar recognizes that he's good and he gives him some authority. So things start to turn up again. But then it all goes wrong again because Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. As many of you will know, he's accused and gets thrown into prison and hits another low point. But from there, as we'll see towards the end of our passage today, things start to turn up again. The prison guard sees something in Joseph that he can trust, and he gives him some responsibility. And if you're at the church meeting on Wednesday, you'll know that means he became a trustee. But that's not the same as the trustee in this church. So that's the story in a nutshell. And you'll see as we read together, there's a few key bits that I've missed out. These two key bits that I've put a star on to give you a clue. Now, as we read this passage, I think these two things are, well, it's one thing really that comes twice. That's another big clue. That's actually the most important thing in this passage, and that's what we're going to focus on. So as we read now together from Genesis chapter 39, which can be found on page 41 in your green Bibles by your shins, then see if you can spot what those two stars are. So let's read together. Genesis chapter 39. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story his wife had told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warder. So the warder put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Did you spot them? The five big words. The Lord was with Joseph. This evening, I don't want us to get caught up in the great soap opera of Joseph, the story that's made it a hugely successful musical and film in the secular world. But I want us to focus on this core truth, because I think if we dig a bit into this, we see just how significant it is for Joseph. And if we let it soak into ourselves, it really can alter our perspective. So let's take a look at the story and see what we can find. Firstly, imagine what it's like for Joseph. He'd been sold by his brothers, lost his multicolored coat, which was his identity in his family, and he's been treated like a slave. Just getting to Egypt was 200 miles, and normally it took about 10 days on a donkey, but if he's with these slave traders, it might have been in a rush, so it might have taken less time, but it would have been more tiring. That's about the distance if you walk from this church up to Crewe. I Google mapped it. That's true. It's quite a long way. He would have been exhausted. He then arrives in Egypt to this huge civilization that's totally different. The culture is completely different to the small settlement of shepherds and farmers that he was used to in Canaan with his father's family. He's in a pretty sorry state. I wonder if at this point he's considering God. We talk a lot about Joseph's faith and his great character, but I wonder if when he reaches this point, was he really thinking about God? I think he was. He would have been struggling. I wonder whether he felt abandoned, without hope, lost. But then we get this gem that it gets me excited, because I know that this story's not over. The Lord was with Joseph. In this foreign land full of new people, cultures, and expectations, God was there. God was constant and steadfast, and he makes Joseph not just live, but he makes him prosper. Now, when we talk about prosper, I think sometimes it can be a tricky ground, but I don't think it always means stuff. Although I think we do see in this passage that God blesses Joseph in some ways with material things. But the word for prosper here, it means to advance, to make progress, to succeed, have success, or be profitable. When God's with us, he blesses us so that we can move forward, so that we can grow and succeed. Whether that's literal material stuff, or spiritual things, or in other ways. And I think God wants the best for us. And in this story, actually, for Joseph to prosper, what that looks like is the experience he gains from being in Potiphar's house. It means that later on, as we'll find out in later weeks, he can move on to bigger and better things because he's learned the leadership, the wisdom, from the responsibilities that he's had in this position. This is where he learns it. And we don't know what Joseph's attitude was when he begins to work for Potiphar. I wonder whether part of him is thinking, I just need to get free. I just need to get back to my family. But the thing is, God doesn't wait for us to be on board with his plans before he's working. God's already working in this situation and in our own situation. And the challenge we're faced with is, are we going to embrace the place that God has put us? We can know that he is with us doing the work, and we can be ready to take hold of the blessings that he's offering us and use them for his glory. Joseph's willing to do the work, even if it's not what he expected when he arrived there, or even what he imagined himself doing 5 years previously. Are we willing to do the work on our front line in the place that God has put us? Whether that's the office, or the school gate, or within our family, or in whatever kind of work we're doing. God has put us in that place, and he is waiting to bless us and to use us. God is saying to you, it's all yours. How much do you want? I think we can have confidence and we can go wholeheartedly into work, into talking and loving and doing for God, because it says in Romans, if God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? I believe that when we do that, others will see God. Potiphar realized that Joseph had something special, and that's why he promoted him. That's why he gives him responsibility and boosts him up. But Potiphar doesn't do it for the right reasons. He recognizes it, but he knows that he can use it to his advantage and to his influence. He doesn't even bother to ask about God. Now, I think all we can do in our situations, in our front lines, in our places of work, is commit ourselves to getting alongside the work that God is already doing in that place. And trust that however people respond, God is using us and he is doing things. But things don't stay great for Joseph. And as is so often the case, I think in the places that God blesses us, they can be the places where the devil tries to snare us, to tempt us away from his plan. Joseph's got almost everything that he could ask for. He's got the power, the position, the authority, even the good looks and the good reputation. He's a young man in the prime of his life. And this puts him right in the spotlight for temptation from the lustful wife of Potiphar. I think the way that we see Joseph respond in saying no to this woman, not just once, but time and time again, shows us about his character and gives an insight into the way that he thinks and what his attitude is about God. In verses 7 to 9, he acknowledges that it's not just his responsibility to Potiphar that stops him, but he knows that God is there and God is watching and that he is standing before God. He recognizes the proposition that she makes is ungodly, even though it might be beneficial to improve his situation, get him more influence, and he might be tempted to take that route in the hope that it would get him somewhere. But we see his integrity and his wisdom and strength in resisting this temptation. And I think that's a reflection of the closeness that he has when he's walking with God day by day, because he really knows and trusts God. I think it takes great power and strength to turn away from human desire, whether it's sexual or material or social. And the power to do that comes from God. It's the power not just to say no at one time and one place, but to steadfastly trust God that his way is the best way, even if it's not the way that we can see, even if it's not the easiest way, and even if it's hard for us to understand. Joseph knows and trusts that the God of truth is with him, and he's at work so that he can face it, even if the consequence in human terms is high risk, which in this situation it is. It doesn't mean that he didn't doubt or struggle, but he knew that God's power was greater than that of the devil. I think this is an encouragement and a warning to us, for where we're blessed and gifted and God is using us, we're at risk. But if we trust the God who walks with us, he can help us to face sin and temptation, whatever the cost is. Now, I love this scene in The Lion King where young Simba and Nala, if you've seen The Lion King, you'll understand, but I'm going to explain. Where young Simba and Nala, right at the beginning, they go off exploring to this elephant graveyard. But all of a sudden, they find themselves in trouble. The hyenas have arrived and they're pressing in on them. And they get them cornered and there's nothing else to do. And so Simba stands there, puffs up his chest, and he attempts to roar, but he's only a baby lion. So what comes out is this like, and it's not scary at all to anyone. And these hyenas are still coming in, and it's quite scary actually, especially if you're a small child. So he goes for it again. He tries another roar, and just at that moment where he tries to roar, this enormous roar comes out of nowhere. And we're like, where's that come from? And in jumps Mufasa, who's his father, and he jumps over them, the young lions, stands in front of them to protect them, and jumps onto the hyenas and just completely takes them out. I think if we feel like sin and temptation is closing in and we're struggling to fight it, we can remember that the Lord was with Joseph and he is with us. He is the God of power and of truth, the one who has beaten all sin and death and temptation already. And he is fighting on our side. I think Joseph knew that, and he could hold fast to that, even when it went badly wrong for him from a human perspective. But I think this is the point where we really start to see God's genius, great jigsaw maker, and his purposes at work as this story continues to unfold, and we'll see that in the coming weeks. Again, Joseph loses his coat, the sign of his reputation and identity from being in that household, and he loses everything. He actually should have lost his life for what he was accused of, and I think it's really interesting that Potiphar chooses not to have him killed, which says a lot about what Potiphar sees in him and his willingness to put him in prison instead of having him killed. I wonder if Joe had hope at this point, whether he thought, hang on a sec, I've escaped death, I should have died, maybe God's doing something. Or I wonder if when he reaches this second dip, when he's stuck in prison all alone, whether he really does wonder if God is there. But then what comes next? Those five words again. That little gem that excites us and reassures us in the darkest of times. The Lord was with Joseph. Steady and consistent through the ups and downs, the Lord is there. Now, this doesn't mean that everything is fixed instantly, and we see that in Joseph's life. We know that he was in prison for at least 2 years, but it could have been more like 10. God with us in our lives doesn't mean that things are easy. I think any Christian in this room, let alone any Christian living in Syria, can testify to that. But I truly think that if God was with Joseph, he and we can have hope, even in the worst of times. When we feel like life is out of control, maybe even out of our hands and because of other people, God is at work in and around us for his good purposes. I think Joseph learned that when all else was taken away, he could still rely on God and know that God was close and was never stopping working. We see it again and again in the lives of the Old Testament characters. When the Israelites are stuck in the desert, God is there with them. When David is stuck in his cave and everyone's chasing him, God is there. When Job lost everything, he still had God. And when Jonah was stuck in the belly of the fish, God was there with him. Now, Rob quoted this last week, and I think it's so good that I thought I'd remind us. A.W. Tozer says, "It is doubtful whether God can bless a man greatly until he has hurt him deeply." We see how God turns the prison guard towards Joe, who is trustworthy, and he gives him responsibility. And we'll see where that takes Joseph in the coming weeks. I think this is the bit that is hardest for us to get our heads around, because it has to sink deeper. Beyond our everyday feelings and the ups and the downs of our lives, right into our hearts, into our core, so that it changes the attitude that we face things with, whatever the situation might be. I think it takes time and it takes training. Now, if you want to run a marathon, you don't just rock up on the day with your trainers and smash a sub 3 hours time. It takes a lot of training, or it should do, in order to get a good time. It takes effort and it takes pain to keep training and to keep running. And I think it's the same with our faith. Our faith muscles need constant reminding, constant work, so that over time it becomes easier for us to remember these things, and easier for us when we face situations where we're tempted, when we face situations that are unknown, even when we're tired and we go into our everyday lives, that we can remember that God is with us. It might be for you the Bible verses that you stick around the house, or the daily conversations that you have with God, or the gentle whispers from your friends reminding you of truth, or taking time to meditate on this. But I think it's worth doing, because I think it really can be significant for the attitude that we have when we face good and bad times. Now, I saw a video on the BBC recently about this bridge, which is a new glass bridge in China that goes across this massive canyon. And it's glass, so you can see through. And obviously that's terrifying, and I would never go on it. But they challenged a BBC reporter to see if he could break through the glass, because everyone was really worried that glass is fragile, so obviously it's going to break and everyone's going to fall to their death. So they got this BBC reporter to get a sledgehammer. It was actually pouring with rain, which is why the picture's not very clear. Really foggy, pouring with rain. They got this BBC reporter to try and smash the glass, and they had a panel that was kind of resting on the top of the actual bridge, the same panel that was fitted in, the spare ones. And they got him to smash it over and over again to see if he could break it. Now, the glass was so thick, it wasn't just one layer of glass. It was loads and loads of layers of glass, all thick layers, one on top of the other, that's the structure of this bridge. So this guy, after constant bashing, all he could do was crack the top layer. And eventually the top layer started to break. But the rest of the layers were still intact. How many layers deep does the belief that God is with us go in our hearts? How many layers deep does the belief that God is with us go in our hearts? For Joseph, for Jonah, even for Job, who had nothing, who, when he lost everything, even beyond their daily feelings, into their core and their existence, even at the worst of times, they found that God was not just present with them, but he was at work for greater and better things to come than they could possibly imagine. I think the truth is that we've already reached the lowest point, the worst time, and that was when we turned against God and we did things that didn't please him, when we sinned against him. At that point, we had little or no hope for the future. But God was at work. And what we see from God's great story that goes beyond Abraham, beyond Isaac and Jacob, and beyond Joseph, is that God is faithfully at work to fix things, to prosper us, to give us hope. God came to be with us in this in an even more breathtaking way, becoming a mere human like us. He sent Jesus to show us that he truly does love us and truly does have great purposes beyond ourselves, beyond our sin, our struggles, our temptations, our doubts, even beyond this broken world that we live in now. He sent Jesus to give hope to the hopeless, to give freedom to those in slavery, to give true life to the dead and faith to the doubter. Hope that helps us now, that his love, his power, his timing and his plans are at work, and that we have hope for the future, that one day we will truly be in God's presence, walking with him, so that we don't need to fear, we don't need to doubt, and where there is no pain. Ben's going to come and lead us in a time of communion now. And as we take that time and we remember through this meal, let's remember that the Lord was with Joseph. And he's with us now too, through all things that we face, because of what Jesus has done for us.